In the public works side.
We're just asking for number four to go.
Number four?
No, that's all right.
No?
Kidding.
Yes, kidding.
Fire?
Kidding, no?
Go for it.
No? Okay, fine.
Are you confused?
I'm confused, but I'm gonna go with public works. Is that right? Is it okay?
Last call.
Last call, okay.
Command decision.
So, the first thing there, you see the roadway fee, this is something that had been brought up at a previous meeting. That's why it's a group discussion. So we'd like to hear from you, you know, what your thoughts are, and I guess that the concept was to open up the roadway fee, include more projects, new projects. You know, which again, it's possible. We can certainly pursue. We just want to hear the discussion about it before we embark.
Can you give us a little more background on that?
Generally, there's, I mean, you typically like to do an update every 5 years just to reassess costs, make sure that indexes are tracking properly.
It's recommended in Government Code 66,000. We do an update every 5 years of the program. Like Darren said, to make sure it's still in line with what the plan is, what facilities need to be delivered, what costs are.
Well, with that, you also assess what projects make sense now that were in it. Maybe take those out if it's not within our immediate needs, and add projects so you're not, it's a numbers game where you're not trying to add to the fee unless costs have gone up, and you assess the fee based on the CPI is not tracking properly or what have you. I mean, you need to make those adjustments. So that's been the conversation we've had when from, you know, can we add this? There's a couple bridges, you know, whatever. You have to look at to reassess the program as a whole, what you want to put in, what you want to take out.
Unlike the last time when it was a major overhaul, staff doesn't feel like there's a lot of changes that need to be made administratively at this time because of the lack of activity and that we have a strong index that we pegged to this last time, and we've been making an annual adjustment. So we don't have a strong feeling, we just know that it needs to be brought forth for discussion, and we want to see if we can make a position.
I think it makes sense.
We wouldn't start probably until the 1st of July, unless we could go find some monies and maybe get it bid out and get it ready, heat up, ready to go. But it would be something we'd be jumping into until at least later this spring or summer. But that's when it turns 4 years old, is this summer.
It was 2009.
Adopted.
July, it was adopted, went into effect.
It took a year and a half to do the updates.
So if we started this July, it'd be about next summer.
We'd be right on a 5-year target when we have an update ready.
What index are you tied to?
Caltrans Construction Cost Index, and we use a 3-year rolling average. We adopted the fee in 2009. Using 2008 as the base year, so we actually are just now getting to that third year because we just used single years and single year. And so we've actually, since we adopted, we've gone down significantly in the fee, and now it's starting to trend back up as that index is starting to pick up, and the big decrease in 08 to 09 works its way out.
So, tangentially related, this GPA for the connector put forth the plan of finance. My understanding of that plan of finance is that it assumes that all dollars in your roadway fee program associated with camera, grant line, and any related projects go to the JPA. Have you looked at that and determined whether or not, based on sort of a pro rata share of the JPA, those are appropriate amounts?
We had a meeting last week, and I have the data for that. I haven't had a chance to look through it yet. So they pulled those numbers from our CIP, but I haven't been able to verify that the actual projects really relate to the JPA connector, as opposed to an interim signalization of existing stock that wouldn't really apply to, you know, widening. lane, it's still the 4 lanes, that sort of thing, so I haven't gone through it yet.
So notwithstanding whether or not they're actually related to the JPA, has there been any quantitative analysis of whether those are appropriate in the grand scheme of the county's participation, the Rancho Cordova, Folsom, Eldorado Hills, Elk Grove, I mean, the whole dynamic of this
it's
regional
based
road.
Directly on the cumulative of each program items.
Right, I understand what they pulled into their study, but as somebody that's followed the county's fee program and the city's fee program, it seems to me that there's not a net zero sum when you look at all those funding sources over the top of each other in terms of who should be responsible for that.
We are just now studying it. We have some concerns with the way they want to administer it. So.
I would guess. That's why I'm raising the issue. Because I think there's probably overburdening of new development by taking everybody's aggregate fees and just assuming that that's a contribution to the jurisdiction.
Any other thoughts of starting an update?
I think it'd be a good idea. It does take a little while to go through all of the various projects in the program, and if there's new projects that need to be evaluated, it's better to get going now.
Well, we're looking at this group as well as your clients too. There are things at the wall as far as what needs to be added, subtracted.
What's the timing on the Suffy policy area? You said that could have an impact on that.
That's coming up later.
No, but I think I'd hate to go through and do a fee structure and then have that come through with a different set of assumptions that, you know, for
they should be coordinated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the same thing. That's the next update.
Land use needs to be figured out.
Could be the next update.
Well, no, he's saying it's the next update on the agenda today.
Develop that land use plan. Information from that would feed into the roadway update. Yeah. So ideally, you'd be including your facilities in this. So.
That's where I was going, budget. I wasn't sure on the planning side, but the timing for that ends up. Is that something you want to defer to or not?
It's hard to say. You know, I mean, we'll give you the update of where we are now, where that matches up to when you kick the,
fee study
off. Yeah. But it's certainly something that we should, pay attention to. All right.
How about if we put the DUEs in there for taking the costs out?
That's an idea.
We can
note
consider
it.
That one, yeah.
next up, sub-regional impact fee, Richard?
For those of you who may not remember, Caltrans was getting concerned with a lot of local agencies approving developments without addressing the impacts on the mainline. So they went through a process of suing actual developments on their CEQA documents and those kind of things, and certainly slowing the whole process down. So the in the small region around us, West Sac, City of Sac, Elk Grove, and Caltrans and SACOG got together to look at the possibility of creating a fee to address mainline impacts. The work went through kind of an interesting nexus process. They didn't identify all the projects that were underfunded, but they tried to identify projects that had the most impact to the region traffic. And then they created at that time, they were talking about creating a fee that would actually incentivize also some of the development activities, where it would reward commercial developments and Elk Grove for generating jobs by having a lower fee than the residential component, and vice versa in downtown Sacramento. If you had a residential development, it'd have a proportionately higher fee than the residential component in Elk Grove. So it was trying to incentivize some of the, to help with traffic. But anyway, that there's a lot of good work, but the fee went nowhere. Because it was coming online at a time when the economy was actually crashing. And I think Thad had some briefings on this, didn't you, Thad? And so one thought is to some of the agencies are thinking, maybe we ought to regenerate some discussions on there, but instead of making the fee a mandatory fee, make it an optional fee. And what the concept would be there is Caltrans is starting to get a little concerned again that without any action on addressing mainline impacts, that they're going to start aggressively pursuing some of the larger developments that are causing these impacts. And so Caltrans has gone on record, at least verbally, and if we enacted a fee, they'd go on formally on record. But the idea is if a development paid into a regional fee to address mainline impacts, that they would not then sue the project. So making it an optional fee, the developer could either choose to pay, and they know that they buy Caltrans off, but there's no guarantee you're going to get, you wouldn't receive a suit from some other place. But at least Caltrans would acknowledge the fact that you're addressing, from their perspective, mainline impacts. So the dialogue's generating again. It's starting, and wanted to update you on that to see how where you think that should be. What kind of interest you have in seeing something like that become a reality in terms of voluntary, mandatory, or other?
What's the order of magnitude on single family?
I can't remember, to tell you the truth. I think it's around $2,500.
I mean, how optional is it once you put it in place? If you don't pay it and they sue you, then set an example out of one project.
And you settle and pay it.
So it's not optional.
Well, what does it do? What's it?
Well, it's meant to address mainline impacts along 599.
There's really no room for any parallel capacity on 99, right?
Well, it's not. Actually, very few. Some of the projects are on mainline and some of them are off. They're taking the SACOG's MTP and identifying the projects that have the best impact for reducing congestion in as a corridor.
Right. They could never come to an agreement as to the impacts specific to one segment or one specific freeway, because you know it would become a too big of a task to determine if the trips generated by any given project, which part of the freeway was it impacting. So that's why they took this sort of regional approach, and that was some of the impetus for that.
Could you define mainline impact? If you're just referring to, in other words, if you're just referring to 5 and 99, what about the arterials? I mean, they're affected whenever there's, you know, congestion as well. Does it include those?
It does include those. This whole Nexus study didn't just look at mainline. It looked at the mainline as part of a corridor for transit, so it looked at both arterials and mainline.
Is that study available?
I can't even remember. It was never formally a Nexus study. It was more general work in progress type stuff to get to a Nexus study.
Yeah.
There's some material available, but I don't think it makes any sense because it's never been. It's more meetings like this bringing pieces of paper.
Yeah. It's dying.
Yeah.
All right. Questions? Thoughts on that? Nope. Moving on. Darren?
SB 5, this is the urban level of protection to intermediate floodplain state bill. And then moving forward came SB 1278, which basically defined exceptions to urban level of protection, which really benefits the city of Elk Grove because in it they talked about localized drainage being an exception. Well, DWR needs definitions of what localized drainage is, and they're soliciting the the stakeholders for definitions of what they feel local impact. I thought it was pretty obvious in the bill, but they don't think it is. DWR is in charge of putting together the criteria for this urban level of protection. That's why they are taking the lead with this definition. So moving forward in the next few months, we will be providing those definitions of localized drainage and shallow flooding as it's been excluded from SB 5 through SB 1278. So that's the only update now. Thought we were out of the woods, but obviously we need to clear this last hurdle, and most of our growth should be excluded.
Good. So now we'll jump to George and Rick.
What's your report?
Okay. Well, at least we're not talking fees necessarily. One of the initiatives by the city this year, and Becky's kind of been leading a lot of this up, is trying to take a look at our processes, our actual facility for development services, the lobby area. We've come up with a few new ideas that have already been implemented, or some of them are in the process of being implemented. One of those being, we had originally a conference room down in the development services lobby, and that was taken over by commercial plans here a while back. So we now moved those back out of that area. We want to recreate a conference room, but this will have a different twist on it, and then we want it to be available to the public or for a group of development folks that come in and want to meet prior to, say, they have a meeting with staff, or give them a place where they can kind of have a little privacy, although there are hidden microphones, stuff like that. And also within that space, potentially, I'm kidding about that. Better say that, huh? Also, we're looking at trying to make a connection with some of the county agencies, maybe through Skype. And I don't know if Becky wants to add anything on where we're at with some of those developments.
We just talked with County Water, and they have stated that they will be available when we get this up and running, which we're going to be in the next few weeks. But we are setting up this conference room again for developers to have meetings in there and be available for public use, not for city use. And then it will have a streaming TV in there available for meetings, phones, whatever else you guys need in there, just let us know. But the real kick is having availability of fire also be on site. They're going to be here every Tuesday, so whenever we need to have meetings that include other agencies, instead of us continuing to act as those resources and relay your information and needs, we will also try to have them engaged in those meetings. So if you'll give us advance notice of what we want to accomplish, we can coordinate that a lot easier. And again, we're going to reach out to Sewer also, and Mark's always amenable, so we appreciate that. So we're just trying to get as close to the one-stop shop we can with whatever resources we have available, and knowing that fire is willing to participate and to see if we can engage the county to make it more whole. And I know Darren has been successful from time to time with larger projects to have the county staff attend meetings in person, and they will not do that. We're just trying to get some video to fill in some gaps. And along with that, the lobby, we also have a computer monitor app that we're going to start showing some informational videos and factoids, and we have economic development's contact information, so as more commercial development comes in, we want to be able to easily identify that for people who may not know to ask, or we may not be sharing as clearly with them as we try to. So it's more of a perception and information sharing.
Becky, do you want to talk about the collecting plans for fire as well?
Yes. in addition to having fire here on site, we are entering into an MOU with the CSD so that we can collect their fees when you submit your applications here. So instead of needing to run over to CSD's offices, we will be able to collect those fees here, and then we'll be remitting them to the CSD on your behalf. So that way, one set of plans and one payment will be able. So thank you, George, for the reminder. And that's going to council on February 13th, so we should be able to do it the next day.
An exception still for sprinkler plans, or they'd be able to pay off?
No, sprinkler plans and fire alarm plans and stuff would still be submitted to our office. You know, I mean, it's typically a completely different contractor. So, but the idea was to be able to have, whether it be the civil engineers, be the builders, architect, whatever, that has to come to City Hall, we'll be able to submit fire plans there as well.
Right now we have, fire departments are here on Tuesday, and we have a program that we've set up for smaller tenant improvement plans, EITC, had to have a name. But the idea was to get, it's really to get more of the folks in here that, I mean, most of you guys are professionals, you know how to fill out a form, you know how, what kind of plans we need, et cetera. But for some of the smaller businesses, 3,000 square feet or less, they're just very simple TIs. Having fire here now and building, being able to actually meet at the counter, they can set up appointments on an hourly kind of schedule that we have. So it gives them a chance to come in, at least get their plan approved by building and fire, planning, and public work while they're here at the city. And, you know, it's a start. We certainly look to try and expand it and grow it as we become more successful. But right now it is limited to the smaller TIs and commercial application. I think one other thing I would mention as we continue to work towards the electronic plan review is we don't have a date yet, but I believe we will soon be, I'm hoping like July 1st, all commercial plans with certain limitations on size of TI plans, we're going to ask be submitted electronically to the city. We already have the e-plan documents. It's just a great system, and I think, you know, it'll benefit, you know, the developers as well as the city, because you're going to be buying a lot less plans. But that, we don't have any definite dates in mind, but we are looking at hopefully July 1st is where the commercial would go all electronic.
Will the CSD be using parks, or is that for parks as well as fire?
We already collect parks.
Yeah, they're already on the system.
This is just the planning fees, yeah.
Okay.
The park fees are already on the, we already collect the park fees.
No, I don't know about the fees. I thought you meant plans, as far as plan review goes.
We collect our impact fees. So the impact fees are already collected.
That's the middle fees. And right now I take them down over to their office.
For parks as well?
For parks.
We need to go fix that.
We need to get that done too.
Yeah, I can work with Bob on that.
Okay, let's put that as well. I still have 2 weeks.
That's about it.
Right.
Taro?
Yeah?
Could I go back one agenda item back, ask a quick question of Darren Wilson?
Sure.
It's about the SB 1278.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the DWR was soliciting stakeholders, and that you predicted that Elk Grove would be excluded. Does that include being excluded on the excluded from this program that they're putting forward?
Excluded from providing urban level of protection for the 200-year floodplain.
So for 200. So we may be in a 100-year or worse.
100-year, yeah.
Yeah.
Still the theme of floodplain.
What kind of an effect do you think is going to it's going to have on insurance? You know, in terms of FEMA insurance,
if Elk Grove, if we can get localized drainage, you know, defined and as the exception as it's intended, it won't have any effect.
But how, no, but I mean in terms of the effectiveness, if it, if we do suffer a 200-year flood or something, you know, something just shy of that, and then we have flooding, is that going to bump up our, is that going to put us in a different risk area?
No, it won't. It's, you'll still be in a 100-year floodplain, and you know, if you're within that 100-year floodplain, you pay insurance. I think there's only like 72 people in all of Elk Grove that pay flood insurance, so you're not talking a host, a large host of people. So
I buy flood insurance, even though I'm in the
okay. So you're one of the 72.
Exactly, and so and I did it for a few years, and I just wondered why my street kept flooding. We, you know, urban flooding is a real issue when you have increased development, especially.
You must be in the Elk Grove watershed.
I'm in the Elk Grove, yes. Elk Grove Creek is, yeah, and so points east in north of Hampton Village and all that. Mm-hmm. When that was put in, it really impacted the neighborhood.
I mean, so we're working with the storm drainage master plan to. We understand that Elk Grove Creek is one of our is the major issue in all of Elk Grove. Mind you, Elk Grove actually functions fairly well from a drainage standpoint. If anybody's been around for large storm events, there are localized flooding. Streets are intended to flood. Some streets are minor residential. Those that are major arterials, like George needs to drive through, they're not. So I think there's a misnomer that people see street flooding, they automatically think this is flooding. It's gonna, it's not intended. But keep in mind, our goal is to protect property and.
Right, but my problem is that it's come right up to my doorstep, okay, which is a little more than this, just the street.
I understand.
I understand that, too, but I'm just saying I would rather spend the $365, you know, for my cheap flood insurance to the city to try to improve the, you know, the maintenance of that channel so that we, you know, the water exits. And other improvements as well, because you know you can always have bottlenecks anywhere along the way. Than to, I just wonder if we're shooting ourselves in the foot by having ourselves excluded. You know, that's maybe more discussion needs to be.
Well, I think it's more detrimental to the city if everybody's excluded, because then 200-year flood protection would be, you know, required for Placerville, in other words, and Auburn and areas that are within this Central Valley flood protection, where it doesn't make sense to have that level of protection. But I do understand, Mike, that Elk Grove Creek is the our main problem in town. We have done one CIP, and we plan on doing several other projects that are gonna help that situation out. In fact, I have a meeting on Friday to talk to a gentleman about, who's from Portland, Oregon, regarding type of LIDs that help alleviate some flooding, localized flooding from the Portland, Oregon area, so he should know about rain. And he's done some, as you know, Elk Grove Creek Corridor is pretty built out. So it's, it's difficult because there's no land available for a detention. We are looking at several areas within the Elk Grove Creek Corridor. One south of Doherty, we just purchased that property to look to do flood attenuation. We're doing everything we can to look at the corridor holistically and come up with the limited real estate, come up with solutions that benefit all the properties within that shed.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So next up, our planning updates. Christopher?
Industrial sites analysis is a project we've been working on for a little while. It's taken us a little bit of time to finish all the analysis and get all the documents in place. But as you recall, this is the project where we're going through and looking at the amount of industrial land we have, trying to reconcile it with what's going on around these different properties, what do we add, what do we need to subtract based on joining property issues, conflicts of zoning, those sorts of things, and then marry it all together with the market study that was done a couple of years ago. Our intent is within the next couple of weeks to get the environmental document on the streets. It's a neg deck, so hopefully a pretty quick turnaround time. A lot of the properties we've been looking at making wholesale general plan or zoning changes, really clean up the mapping, we required a whole extra set of analysis, more intensive traffic modeling. So from a cost perspective, we're sort of full then dovetails in with the Southeast policy area. I don't know if we've gotten together since the council action over the summer to talk about this, but the quick update. On July 25th, the council gave direction to go ahead and complete master planning for the Southeast policy area. So we're in the middle of that now, or we'll see the earlier stages. We've taken some cracks at drafting a land plan. There were some resistance components from some of the landowners and dialogue that ensued. So what ended up happening on January 17th, we took a series of land use strategy questions to the Planning Commission, had a really good dialogue for over 2.5 hours. Got some good feedback from them and the general public, and are now working on preparing what I'll call an illustrative land plan. It's not going to be anything of nitty-gritty details like you see in the Laguna Ridge land plan or some of the other specific plans that we've done. It'll be a little bit more bubbleized for now, just to say, hey, this is the direction we're going. So we're not going to show the details about, hey, here's park locations, here's how the trails all interact. It's really more a couple steps back from that. We'll get acreage numbers, we'll figure out what the land carrying capacity is in terms of dwelling units, jobs, square footage of uses. We'll try to plot in some school sites for some flexibility there, articulate how the Shed C corridor is going to look based upon the information from the storm drainage master plan. And then that'll kick off our engineering studies. We're doing water, sewer, level two studies there, full traffic analysis will then dovetail into the EIR. And drainage master, conceptual drainage master plan, basically, for the area. So we'll identify where detention facilities, retention facilities, capacity of Shed C once it's basically realigned and reconstituted as a more formal drainage facility rather than more farmland component that it is today. So our approach at this point, we're working on putting together that illustrative concept plan this week. Our goal is to be at Planning Commission on the 21st of February to roll that out, get the Planning Commission to review it, give us any notes, and hopefully five of them nod heads in agreement that this map is ready to present to the City Council for review and blessing so we can get the engineering started, as well as put together the policy document. What we're doing is a community plan. We'll have all the policy statements we'll adopt as part of the general plan. Then correlating with that will be these technical engineering studies, and then architectural guidelines and some zoning changes. We're probably looking at a couple of new zoning districts to reflect what we're doing. Not a specific plan. Council specifically said that they were not interested, at least at this point, so we understood them, in doing any sort of infrastructure phasing, financing, overall development phasing. Certainly the question could be reposed to them in a year or so. But the general gist at this point is, we'll get the engineering side done, we'll know what those backbone facilities are. And I'm sure cost will be a part of the conversation, but the scope of work at this point does not contemplate doing any sort of fee programs or CFD financing or anything like that. It'll need to be a separate conversation. So we have a couple of development interests that are thinking about bringing in some mapping opportunities later in the summer. Our schedule is that probably by the end of spring, early summer, we would have the policy document, the engineering studies pretty well complete, and some of the other technical pieces done. We'll go through a public outreach process on that and then get the EIR hopefully on the street by like July, I'm thinking. So that tees us up for about this time next year, hitting Planning Commission for review, recommendation to council for adoption in the spring. 14.
I have a question about the city's general outlook on pedestrians, and how, when you talk about the number of units and the sprinkling of amenities here and there for schools and so on. One of the major concerns I have is just how we make our communities walkable when we have 30-foot streets that have 60-foot intersections. Nobody's going to try to cross those as easily. I mean, the intersection is more dangerous than jaywalking. That we don't have arterials that are protective of pedestrians, and frankly don't encourage people to get out of their cars and go from place to place and and to create that kind of economic community or that commercial commerce of community commerce, you know, like, oh, here's the bakery, here's a bookstore, here's, you know, and so on. So instead, you're getting in your car every time, you know, to cross a big parking lot or to get across a busy median. So what's the city doing by the time, you know, by the time you get all these engineering studies and everything and all the planning and the developers' hopes up, and the builders, you know, figure they're locked and ready, and the EIR is kind of, you know, mid-range, and, you know, people are standing up like me saying, well, you know, what about, am I still going to get run over by my neighbor going to the grocery store, you know, or to picking their kid up at school, or are we going to have what we have at Elk Grove High and along the Elk Grove Foreign Corridor every afternoon and every morning with parents driving their kids because they're afraid to have their kids walk to school? I mean, I'd really like to see all this change. I think there's ways we can do it, even with the existing infrastructure. This is new stuff, so why not try something new that works? The governor's strategic growth initiative and has a commission. It's headed by Heather Fargo, used to be mayor in Sacramento. I mean, she should be able to, you know, sit down with folks and talk about, you know, where this should be headed, and maybe give you some ideas. So there's Walk Sacramento. They're certainly trying to get kids to safely to school. I mean, these are all beginning points. So
yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, that we've actually discussed this quite a bit internally, and it has come up in the various workshops. And I think that you're absolutely right. This is an opportunity for us to implement and have some ideas on this plan. And see exactly what we come up with. You know, obviously, at this point, there's no details, but I think it's good to have that discussion, to get that input, because at the end, we want it to be, you know, we have our council direction. This has to be, jobs is the priority for the area. Obviously, there's going to be residential, and we want to be able to integrate it in a way that's more, you know, modern, I guess, is the way to look at it. Walkable communities, the whole concept. So, yeah, we are definitely not only aware of the concepts, but as we move forward, we want to implement some of those in there. And it'll be, you know, through that public process, review process, how well we're doing it, what else do we need to, you know, tighten up, so on. So, the best thing to say there is stay tuned, I guess, you know. So.
Well, I almost feel like you need to be prodded a little bit, because we've got a lot of infrastructure that needs to be changed. And when Fargo was the mayor, they were forced through an ADA lawsuit to do traffic calming in the grid. And the grid is, I mean, I don't know if you've walked through it at all, but I mean, I've walked through it for decades, and you know, when I work downtown and afterwards, and it's a whole lot more humane. I mean, it's actually easier to walk and bike than it is to drive, and we almost need to get to that point where we tell people, you know, so that we do get those the vehicle miles traveled reduced, and because you know, I don't think we're going to continue to get money from the feds if we don't reduce their pollution levels. That's another issue that's very realistic. I mean, and I think We're hitting a brick wall there. I'm surprised, and even though the vision from SACOG is good, it doesn't necessarily give much hope when you can see that all evaporate. You know, every time we build one of these freeway interchanges, I mean, I just think of all the stuff, the improvements that we could have done to our existing neighborhoods. You know,
can we try and finish up?
Yeah.
Next two items.
Yeah. Sorry. Not to. And maybe Mike, we can you know, talk separately. Meet separately. You know, talk about some of the ideas.
I think it's important that the builders and the developers and you guys, when you have your meetings here and you have your lunches, you know that that there's a real concern out there in the community and a love for the community. Sacramento's a good place to live, but frankly, things are getting screwed up. And you know, the finger blames at you. So you need to think twice when you tell me to shut up. Because you can do that.
No one's doing that. We're constrained for time. A lot of us have to go.
I know. But this was a quick notice, and I appreciate, you know, staying on task. So. But I just want you to know that you get,
we,
need to
we
hear
what
this.
You're saying, and I respect what you're saying, and we understand it.
Right, and I respect what you stand for, you know, what you're doing, okay? Because I live in a house, too. It was built by a builder, you know.
All right. Freeway signs.
Freeway signs. City Council direction last week was to continue working on trying to resolve this issue. They've asked us to go back to Planning Commission with some tweaks to the approach, essentially utilizing the existing allowances for signs rather than creating some new set of signs out there. There's an opportunity to display messaging within a larger business center. Folks that currently have property along the highway can possibly lease some space to adjoining properties within this mile radius around each of the interchanges. So we're looking at the calendar for the Planning Commission. The February 21st date's pretty full, so this might get bumped early March, but we're working on that side of things at this point. Sarah, you're the next one.
Sure. Housing element. We have our background report largely completed. That's the demographics and that sort of information. We have our sites inventory done, and letters will be going out this week to the property owners whose properties are on that list. We are going to do a rezone program. Well, we're going to do our rezoning as a part of our housing element, and we are looking at rezoning a number of properties to RD30 as a part of that, and changing the land use designation on some of them as well. And so those letters will go out this week, and then we're working on our programs. Our goal is to take our number of programs, which we have a lot of programs, and get them down to a more manageable level. So that's where we stand at this point.
Question. I know we're going to try to wrap up, but has the city considered the feasibility of RD30 in this area? I mean, it's it's been demonstrated that the costs make it harder to achieve affordable housing at that density.
So we have talked to a number of affordable housing builders. We do have two projects that have been built at RD or at 30 units to the acre or above. And of course, RD 30 doesn't require you to build at 30, just at, you know, at 25. Is that right, Tara?
Yeah.
25. We have had a number of projects that have been built at that density or greater. So at this point, the information that we have is that that is feasible. You know, we are going to leave some sites as RD20 sites as well.
Right. I mean, we're looking, the sites that we're looking, we're trying to be as specific as possible, which ones we pick or we're recommending for RD30 and which not. One of the biggest challenges that we're going to have in this round, as opposed to the previous round, is that we were able to take advantage of overlay zoning previously in our previous round of allocation. And what we have heard is that we're not going to be able to do to that level that we were before. So we are really, and it's going to be, and I'm putting it out there because it's not going to be an easy thing. I think it's not going to be easy for the decision makers. And it's not going to be easy. It hasn't already been easy coming up with the sites to get us to where we need to be. So while you're absolutely right that there might be some constraints, we're trying to be as you know, surgical as possible, looking at those sites because we really need the higher densities if we're going to meet our goals. So
you're looking at transit locations and things like that where you can reduce the parking to make it work.
Yep.
How many additional?
We need a total of about 146 acres, and we're accommodating about 3,500 units, very low and low income units.
This is 146 additional acres of.
That's how much total we need to meet our RENA, and we, you know, obviously we want more than that, so that if a site doesn't get developed, you know, we don't have to go back and do some changes to the general plan.
Right?
Well, we only have. I'm not sure we have any sites at this point zoned RD30, so yes, that would all be new RD30.
But
some of the sites were in our previous,
inventory,
some of the sites were in our previous housing element as RD20 sites, and so we're looking at making those RD30 and continuing to count them.
What percentage of the sites you're looking at are for RD30 are currently RD20?
I believe it's about. It's enough to accommodate about 1,000 to 1,200 units. So It's about a third.
When will you have a draft available?
The draft of the housing element? Well, that's a good question. we're meeting later this week to kind of go over the time frames for that. And so I would hope that we would have something in maybe April.
All right, so there are no questions on these planning updates. Just on the other items, I think that, Mark, you had one quick follow-up on...
If you recall from our previous meetings, I've been informing you that the Oak Grove Water District is revisiting our water user fees and our water connection fees. The water user fee work is almost done. The work of the water connection fees has just started. Jim's dad, Ed, has joined us in a meeting here last week. We kind of kicked things off. We will be looking at this very close. To be clear, we have two types of connection fees. We have a meter charge, the cost of purchasing and installing the actual water meter, and then we have a capacity charge. The capacity charge we can only assess in service area one, so not in the county area. The meter charge, I believe we can impose that throughout both service area one and service area two. You know, we're just getting going, so we're just looking at the numbers, but here's my crystal ball. My crystal ball is telling me that relative to the capacity charge, for a one-inch connection right now, it's about $3,600, I think, isn't it, Bruce? It's about $3,600 or thereabouts. I don't see any major changes to that. We may make some minor adjustments. I say that now, knock on wood, but it is our hope that we won't have to tweak that very much, if at all. The meter charge, I can tell you right now, is low. Our meter charge for a one-inch meter, to install it is about $575 or thereabouts. I know our raw cost for putting it in is over $1,000. So by law, we can't make a profit, so we're going to be resetting that and probably going to be looking at a cost somewhere in the $1,000 to $1,100 range, would be my guess. Timing, this work must be done and considered by our board on or before April 24th to enable a basically startup time to impose the new user fees and connection fees starting on July 1. So that's where we're at.
All right. Thank you. So that's it, folks. The end of the agenda. The next scheduled meeting is March 11th, but again, you know, if look up for the agenda if you need. If not, just move it along. So thanks for coming.
Mark, did you get it? Do you want to talk about that project
Do you want to spend 15 minutes
and talk about that project? Yeah, with Jennifer Maven?
Well, the requirement for the housing element is simply that you zone adequate sites for affordable housing. There's no requirement that it actually be built. And RD 30 is considered sufficient to encourage affordable housing. So would...
Does that go on the... is that the assumption